Breaking It Down with Frank McKay. This is 103.9 LI News Radio.
I'd like to welcome everyone to Breaking It Down. Frank McKay here, but much more importantly, the author of a wonderful book, Celebration of Success, is with us here today. Dr. Phyllis Cole Costin is our guest, and we'll be talking about the wonderful book, but also about success in general and a little bit about her life. Dr. Costin, how are you?
I'm fine, thank you.
Well, if you don't mind, let's start from the beginning. Where were you born and where were you raised?
Oh, I was born in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, actually in a small suburb called Lincoln Place. It's part of the city of Pittsburgh, but it's very small. We didn't have paved streets or anything, but it was a very wholesome place to grow up.
Yeah.
Wonderful school and small community.
You know, it makes it kind of interesting that you grew up in Pittsburgh is the fact that Andrew Carnegie, way back when,
yes,
had so much to do with Pittsburgh and you know, of course, U.S. Steel. And he was a proponent of studying success and talking about success. Has that ever been brought up to you? You know, here you are, a success philosopher and a writer on success. Carnegie was into that as well.
That's right. Well, we studied about him in school, I remember.
And, you know, so much of Carnegie was about paying it forward and moving it on. All right, so in school, what was your concentration, especially early on in school? What were your favorite subjects? What did you like about school, and what didn't you like about school?
I loved to read. I was a good reader. My mother had taught me before I went to school, and I remember a teacher taking me around all different classes of first grader reading to them. So the teacher was wise because she made me feel how important reading was. So reading and then history. I love to learn about facts and people. Interesting, my husband is a professor of history, so I guess I enjoyed hearing about it from him as we were dating.
What did your folks do for a living?
My dad was a clerk at B&O Railroad, an accountant, and my mother was a homemaker.
Yeah, and I'm sure they were proud. Did they live to see your success?
Some of it, yes. Not as much as I've had in these later years, but they knew I was doing well in teaching and so forth.
Do you remember the first time you recognized an author or a book that you were reading and considered it something that could be helpful for your own life, for your own career? In other words, I don't want to say self-help book, but when was the first time you recognized that a book could be very helpful and you could apply it to your own life and success?
I don't remember that exactly, but I do remember I had a teacher, Alice B. Wright, who used to say, "The child who reads will be the child who leads." So that made me feel reading was very important.
Yeah, no question about it. Let me remind folks that are just tuning in or just turning on their radios. Frank McKay here, but much more importantly, Dr. Phyllis Cole Costin is our very special guest, and we're talking about her wonderful book, Celebration of Success. And let's jump ahead a little bit. What caused you to write the book? What was the time period or the time process in prepping to get the book out? When did this all start?
Well, I don't know. I think I had thought about writing a book as soon as I retired, but there had been two programs in West Virginia that were known to be outstanding. One was Westlands, the one I was at. The other was at Marshall. And the author, Barbara, wrote a book that came out right at the time I was ready to write this book called The Pretenders. Her name was Barbara Geyer, and Barbara was the director of the program at Marshall. And she wrote a book, The Pretenders, which is very good, which deals with the students in her class. So I thought at that time, well, we don't want two books to come out right there. I will wait maybe 10 years and try to do one that shows what the students have done in that 10-year period. And I think that was a wise decision, and that's what caused false celebration of success, because all the students in here were already in their chosen fields.
Yeah, it's an interesting title, and we do, as a society, celebrate success. We don't always look at it like that, but we do. We like to talk about successful people. We like to, you know, in some ways, emulate successful people. But it's different when you sit and you analyze how someone gets to where they ultimately wanted to get, and I should say get to, and so much of that is ignored, and I don't know how much of that is taught in school, but I love the quote, the child who reads will lead, and that's just absolutely terrific. I'm not sure that in school, and especially the public schools, that we take that into consideration as much as we should. Let's teach the kids how to get things done. Let's teach the kids and the young people how to succeed, how to set goals and everything else. Does any of that come up in your book?
Excuse me, what was your question?
Well, do you address that? Do you address how success starts out, how success is germinated from the schools on?
Well, I think one of the first things before a child or anyone can be successful is that they have to accept themselves. I think you, and that you have, that children need to know they're important. I think you have to believe in yourself also.
Yeah, well, there's no question about it. How do you go about doing that? Do you have children?
Yeah, I have two children who are grown now. My son's a librarian, and my daughter is a director of a farm sanctuary shelter. She saves animals and is quite well known in the animal rights movement.
Very nice. Your son, that's the librarian. That's interesting. He gets that, well, maybe he gets it from both of you, but certainly gets that from his mom.
He gets it. And he really follows his dad. He's a history major and a history buff, and my husband's a history professor. So our home is a home of readers, so I think that's important.
Yeah, no, it is. I used to teach music, and I had this one student who was home taught, and I ended up homeschooling my two oldest children. Yeah, and I remember before I did this mother of this child, and he was so brilliant, he was so well educated, he was so far ahead of so many of the other kids in this school, and it was just a simple, you know, music class that I was teaching, and I said to her, I said, what is the key? And she says, you know what? I don't care what they read. I want them to read. And when they're done reading, I want them to read some more. And when they're done with that, I want them to read even more. I don't care if it's comic books. I don't care if it's the Bible. I don't care what it is. I want them reading anything, anything they can get their hands on. I want them absorbing things. I want them thinking. I want them thinking about what other people are saying. And she put such an emphasis. And again, it's a small sample size, you know, at least, you know, her success, but her children, not only that son, but she had a younger child. They were just so far ahead of it. But she equated it all to reading and just and, you know, a big part of it anyway, to the fact that she was pushing the reading with them.
Right.
I mean, how much of that do you agree with?
I think, yes, I think you. Push is maybe not the right word. You want to make children
encourage, right?
Read.
Yeah.
Read. My son is quite a reader. He has three books going at once. He's a librarian now. And I think his love of reading comes from just reading so much himself. But he's always reading. And I think that's important.
What have you been reading lately? And is it different now reading that since you've written? Do you read things differently? Do you see things differently and see the author's thoughts a little differently?
Oh, I don't know. I have always tried to reflect on what does it mean today. I teach a Sunday school class, so I'm always reading a lot about material the Bible and materials and reinterpret it. And I'm in the midst now. I belong to a reading group, and we're reading a book now called Hillbilly Elegy, which deals with West Virginia, which is about the culture of a family and the crisis area. And it's a very good book. And I like belonging to a book club because we get a variety of readings that way.
Let me remind folks once again, you're hearing the voice of Dr. Phyllis Cole Costin, and she is the author of Celebration of Success. And so just a wonderful read, a wonderful book. Everyone should get this. Can you give us some information on how to get the book? You have a website or you have a social media site where people can go?
The best way to get it is go through Amazon. It's in on Amazon, and it's also at Wesleyan College. But Amazon's the easiest for everybody to get it.
You know, it's interesting. You just mentioned the last book, the Hillbilly. In the title it has Hillbilly, and it talks about West Virginia, and West Virginia is so close to Pittsburgh, or at least a part of it. I think what is it? Morgantown is real close to Pittsburgh. Is that
Morgan? Well, Morgantown is about 45 minutes from Pittsburgh, I'd say, and it's an hour. Buckhannon is an hour south of Morgantown. Buckhannon, where the college is that I have taught in and still have an office, is in the middle of the state.
When you think about those areas, I think about hardworking, blue-collar work ethic, and folks that are, close, maybe close-knit families and so forth. But you don't usually think, of those areas, and especially West Virginia and Appalachia, and even the title of this book, either mentions it or pokes fun, or I don't know, and what reference they're talking about hillbillies. But you get that from the outside world whenever they think about West Virginia or parts of the mountainous areas there. Is any of that offensive to the area, or are they just so used to it and they kind of just blow it out? I mean, does the word hillbilly...
It doesn't bother a native of Pittsburgh, so it probably doesn't bother me. But I have friends who get upset at that, who think they're putting them down. Other friends who thrive on it, who say, I'm proud of this. West Virginia as a whole, the people I know, are proud of their state. Not necessarily the word hillbilly, but proud of their state. And their. I have a close friend who teaches Appalachian history, and he really likes West Virginia. Marvin Carr is his name.
I do, too. I've had the opportunity to spend some time in West Virginia, and I love it. As I love Pittsburgh, I used to go to Pittsburgh, a place called, and I'm losing my memory here, Greenburg. Right, Greensburg, right outside of Pittsburgh. My son had
Greensburg, parents were married there.
Ah, that's interesting. My son, when he was a teenager, had a friend up there, a young lady friend, and we would go see the parents up there, and they would correspond back and forth. But it's such a wonderful area there, and it's a steel town. Is Pittsburgh still is industrious as it used to be? I mean, what's the situation as far as steel goes and the manufacturing of steel? Is it still steel town?
I'm not there anymore, but Pittsburgh has become technology. The emphasis has shifted from steel to technology, computers and so forth.
Yeah, and, I think Carnegie Mellon isn't too far from there, right? Is Carnegie Mellon?
No, Carnegie Mellon is part of Pittsburgh, right.
Right.
And they have wonderful museums and things for children.
So much of that, what you hear about in those areas, and again, I can't help but go back to Carnegie. I'm a big fan of Carnegie, and I was a big fan of Napoleon Hill. I don't know if you know him, of him. He's a self-help writer, and he passed away a long time back, but he was a young reporter in college, and one of his first assignments on the school paper was to go interview Andrew Carnegie. So we went to...
Oh, that would have been a good assignment.
Yeah, you're not kidding. The richest man in the world, by the way. So he showed up, and he was from West Virginia, Napoleon Hill. And, you know, he was a real mountain type guy. So he went over and he spoke to Carnegie. And Carnegie spent all day with him, which was very, very generous. And at the end of the interview, Carnegie said to him, he said, "This is just beginning. I'd like you to come back tomorrow, and I have something very important to ask you." And he did. And, you know, this is the richest man in the world asking this young, poor kid who's going to college to come back. So he came back the next day, and he says, "I would like for you, I'm going to open every door for you. I want you to meet Thomas Edison. I want you to meet Henry Ford, and I want you to meet all these successful people. And I would like you to study them. And not only now, but over the next 20 years, and I want you to put it in book form, and I want a formula, a philosophy of success to come out of this." And he thought, you know, young Napoleon Hill thought, boy, this is interesting. The richest man in the world wants me to come work for him for 20 years for no money. And, you know, he said, you know, what a dilemma. So he didn't think twice. He said, "I'll gladly do it and I'll accomplish it," and so forth. So Carnegie opened all these doors for Napoleon Hill. And, you know, obviously the contacts are just, you know, just amazing to get when a guy like Andrew Carnegie opens up a door for you to meet this one. They pay attention to it. But the ironic thing is that he wrote Think and Grow Rich. And it was a bestseller, millions and millions of copies still every year sell, and it's changed so many lives, and it made so many people successful. But it was a study of success, and it was started off of Andrew Carnegie in Pittsburgh, and you generated from, you know, originally from Pittsburgh, and you have the celebration of success. And it's funny that you don't know Napoleon Hill, because it's so much, you know, about success and about a book about success. Go ahead. Go ahead. I'm sorry, doctor.
That's interesting.
Yeah. Well, let me ask you this. What books have you read prior to this that was success-oriented, that were related to success? And before you answer, let me remind folks, Dr. Phyllis Cole Costin is our very special guest. Frank McKay here with the doctor. What self-help have you read?
I've read books I've got a lot of history books about people. I think that are successful. I enjoyed McCullough's Truman's book. Enjoyed Hillary Clinton's book on living history. I enjoyed reading about Barbara Bush. I just enjoyed I enjoyed about several books on Eleanor Roosevelt. I've always been really interested in Eleanor and her success, starting out as a really unhappy child, but then to become so successful and really being the legs for FDR. A lot of what he gets credit for, it was because Eleanor was behind him. And so I would say reading books about biographies have been very important for me.
Yeah, same here. And it's very interesting that you say that she was the legs for FDR, and maybe in those last days of his life and his presidency, maybe a lot more than his legs. She might have been communicating what she felt his thoughts were, and a lot of them were her thoughts too. A very, very powerful woman, very successful woman, Eleanor Roosevelt, much more than just somebody holding her husband's coat. She had a lot to do with shaping what happened next after the Depression and after World War II.
That's very true.
Well, we have a couple minutes left in this segment, and we're going to glad to have more with you. But Dr. Phyllis Cole Costin, again, is the author of Celebration of Success. Wonderful book. And everyone go to Amazon and pick up this book and read it. What can you tell us in closing about the book without giving it all away? Give us a little
one
something.
One of the things that I hope people will take note of is at the end of most of the chapters, I asked the students to give a tip for success. And I wrote the book so students would read. People with learning disabilities would read it. And that's my hope. Some of you listening, if you have a neighbor who has a child with a learning disability, give him a book. It's a nice Christmas present. But I just wanted to get into the hands of young people, especially who have learning disabilities, so they know they can succeed. That's why I wrote the book, so that others could know that it's not a disability. I taught my students it's a learning difference. And I think, to me, that's the key to acceptance, that you don't have a disability. You learn differently. I also used to use the term dyslexia as a gift, because dyslexics do learn things differently. Often they have a perspective and see things holistically that many people just see linear. And so I think that it can be, if you can consider it a gift, you can succeed.
I think that's wonderful. It's a wonderful approach to it, and you're taking something that's normally looked at as being negative, and you're showing that it's not that, and it could very well be positive. I want to thank you very much for being here, Dr. Phyllis Cole Costin. Thank you very much.
Thank you for the opportunity. I always like to share to help a dyslexic young person. Thank you.
Well, you're certainly doing that. And the book is wonderful. Everyone get it. It's getting rave reviews all over the place. Get it at Amazon. It's called Celebration of Success. Dr. Phyllis Cole Costin is the wonderful author of it. And she has been at life for a long time for a young gal. And she has a lot to say and a lot to add, a very positive approach to it. And we want you all to tune in next time when we have Dr. Phyllis Cole Costin on. Frank McKay signing off. We'll see you all next time on Breaking It Down.
Thank you.